So the first text I got this morning from Jimmy just said, cat poop. So thanks for that.
Could mean anything.
Every time we're about to hit 9 o'clock when we get together, any one of us might say 2 minutes, I have to do something, or just 2 minutes, 2 minutes. Usually there's no explanation. It just means something's going to take you 2 minutes. Yeah. I just went 2 minutes, cat poop. So I came into my office and the cats had really done a number on this place. So I had to take care of it. Sometimes I sit through it. I don't say anything. You guys don't notice my nose, but today I had to clean it up.
Wow. When you say done a number, you mean number two, right?
They've done a number two, yeah.
Hey-o. Yeah.
We have two indoor cats.
You sound like my teenage boys making poop jokes, like immediately.
You want to hear something funny? So I told, Dave, you might have stepped away for a minute. I told Bob, when I clean out the litter box, it's near the front door of the house. So I open the front door of the house and I just throw the scoop right onto the lawn. I sort of try and throw it as far as I can so it hits the road, but it usually doesn't. And I always wonder if the guy who takes care of my lawn, Justin, if you're listening, I hope it's not causing a problem for the lawn though. Because there's like 2 years worth of litter box debris on the front lawn. I think it just goes back to the earth is really what I think. But yeah. I don't know. I don't know if when you come mow the front lawn specifically, something happens. I don't know. It's just my theory. That's it.
You know, it's weird, like, not to just talk about poop, but we have three dogs and two of them are older and they, not older, but they are the older of the three dogs. And they're really good about, you know, if you got to go to the bathroom, you go out into the grass somewhere and you do your thing. And then Boone, our younger dog, who's about, I don't know, 9 months maybe now, he kind of does that, but he doesn't really differentiate between the sidewalk, like the concrete, and the grass. So as long as he can see grass somewhere, he'll go ahead and go to the bathroom, which means it ends up on the concrete a lot of times. And I don't really understand that. It's like, there's plenty of yard, just go, you know, or he'll like stand with his feet in the grass, but his butt is over the concrete and he'll go that. Yeah. So it's, I had to deal with that this morning. That's why I brought it up. Anyway, you got any poop stories, David?
I'm going to save my poop stories for the after show.
Oh, great.
People are going to pay for that.
Cool. Well, what's been going on?
Not a whole lot. I made my own hammers.
Ooh.
This is a brass hammer. I got like this. I'll try not to be an
dude. That reel is really, really good. That ad that's going around for Infinimaker.
Yeah.
How do you say that name?
Yeah. Infimaker.
Infimaker, which by the way, I'm supposed to get mine Thursday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
They've been pretty easy to deal with.
Their few emails seem pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, for me, there was a slight learning curve just because I've never had to design or work with like a five axis. That's a hard word for me to say. CNC. But it's kind of mind blowing and bonkers. I did break a couple bits and it turns out it was always user error. And,
Did you start with round stock? I noticed your holding was with the, so you didn't have to do the hammer face.
So, I started with round stock. That was the size of the hammer face. So this part went into the vise.
Yeah.
And so it was designed like this, where the face would be the final size.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
And, it's pretty, it's crazy. Like this technology is in like desktop CNCs now. I say desktop. It's like a 350-pound machine. And mine sits on the floor because we'll get to it later, but there's no way I could get it up onto a surface by myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But pretty incredible machine. Like it's crazy what we can do in our garage. And I'm trying not to be an ad, but I am genuinely impressed.
I thought it was so well done. Your voiceover, you're on camera. You really look super pro. Not that you never did before, but I was just like, wow. And then the results of the three hammers, it's great.
Yeah. And then I did this, I carved this acrylic thing. What I didn't talk about in the video is the idea for the video was to take this new machine and put it to the test. Like they give you test files and they give you materials and everything. But I'm like, I just want to use my own materials from McMaster Carr and make my three hammers. I started with a wood one, an easier one, and then used soft metals, aluminum and brass, and then went up to steel. And so the three hammers were supposed to be like the first half of the video, putting the machine to the test. And now I'm going to make a piece of art. And I was just starting to run out of time and I couldn't come up with a good design. So I drew up this thing in Fusion 360 and it's just basically clear acrylic came out of a big chunk and it's got a brass insert. But it does show like you can, you know, the machine has to cut from the side and underneath. So it still uses the five axis. And it was supposed to be much bigger, but I just ran out of time for designing. And when I got done, it looks like a J.D. Power and Associates award. I hate it so much. It's why it's barely in the video at the end, the finished piece.
So I have to admit, that's kind of what I saw when you first held it up.
Yeah. So, yes. Anyway, but,
there's a sponsorship you could go for. Look what I made. J.D. Power.
Yeah. But I did a cool thing. Like, you know, the machine doesn't leave a clear, crystal clear, finish on acrylic. So, after it got machined, I sanded it down and then took a flame and then flame polished all of it. And it was a good little trick. And then the brass insert, I took and sandblasted the inside so it would have a texture. And then it's like a 3D thing. So just think of like a big coin. And then the outer surface I polished. So there would be this like contrast between the two things, but it didn't come out as cool as I thought. So I didn't get into a lot of details on the art piece because now it's just a big old paperweight.
Nice. That's cool. Jimmy, what have you been working on?
Believe it or not, I'm texting Pat Lapp right now. So you guys see me. He's asking me some specific question about something. What have I been doing? David Welder is here this week. So you guys might see him on some social media. David and I haven't been together in 10 years. In fact, he's like walking around the house. He hasn't been here in that much time. He's like, when did you do this? And I'm like, oh, you know, we're having like a really great couple days reminiscing about stuff and having a lot of laughs. And, when I stopped working for the whiskey companies on the road, because it got down to them, like, hey, how come you guys aren't sending me around? They go, because we pay you five times more than most of the other people and we don't need you standing around looking at a truck. And so that's why they started using me just for like homemade stuff versus taking guys out on the road. And now Dave is like their emergency. He basically says, I'm like an EMT for them. When they try and do a job on the cheap and everything goes wrong, they know Dave will travel anyway with a box of tools. So Dave has become their main guy. So that's we were talking about chickens. He's like, I can't really get chickens because in a minute's notice, I might have to go to Miami. I have to go to Chicago. I might have to go here. Sometimes he goes on a cruise ship for these guys. And, so anyway, that's what Dave has been up to, working for Bullet Bourbon and the marketing crew for those guys on the road. And, we started doing some sawmill work yesterday and I'm going to put up a couple of reels. So we started getting into playing with the sawmill. I'm preparing wood. This is another long-term project. I want to take my shipping containers and build a shed over the two of them, which was the original idea. I never got to it. But I'm milling up 6x6s out of a bunch of logs my neighbors gave me. And I'm going to use those 6x6s to try and create trusses. And I have a laser coming in to cut steel in a couple months. So I'm going to cut steel gussets to clamp all these things together. So I'm really in the infancy of a couple of projects. Using the sawmill with Dave's help. And, what else? Oh, I wanted to clarify something. I'm getting so many people contacting me. I don't know if you guys are paying any attention, but everybody thinks we have a new season of making fun. And we do not. We do not have a new season of making fun. Every once in a while, there's a groundswell where we get a lot of emails and messages about the show saying, when is season two? And around the middle of July, it started happening again. And everyone, it's like the collective consciousness just is like, hey, where's the show? And there is no show. There's no new season. There's no nothing. But me and Paul and a couple of the guys are talking, like, why don't we just start showing the behind the scenes clips just to give everybody something new to look at? And all of us, us six, seven people that were like actually on camera and everybody in the crew was constantly iPhone clipping stuff for fun. So there's all this standby side clips of all of us doing our thing. And some of them are very funny. So those clips are what Paul said, let's post a clip every day until they pick the show up again as a joke. And they're never going to pick the show up. We know it's a complete long shot. And so we just started this campaign, and every other one, Paul will collaborate with me or collaborate with Derek or collaborate with somebody. So, but Paul is running the Facebook or the Instagram page for Making Fun. And every day we're into the chat, we're sending cool clips, and Paul does a quick edit on them, and then he publishes them. So that's what's been going on. That is simply just for fun, because that's what we do. We make fun and we publish fun, but there is no new show. I'm getting calls from my older relatives that don't know how to use an iPhone. They're like, congratulations. I'm like, on what? Exactly. Now I know each time someone calls, congratulations on the new show. I'm like, there is no new show. It's just the old show.
Any of it getting back to the top people over at Netflix?
We have no idea. And this is another thing I can clarify. I have occasionally, I get a call from somebody I haven't talked to in a long time. They're like, hey, I got a really good idea show. Could you represent it to me from Netflix? I'm going to clarify something right now. No one's going to hear it. I'm still going to get these phone calls. I never, ever once had a meeting at Netflix. Never in my life. I never met anybody at Netflix. That's a lie. I met one person one time at a lunch table. And the people at Netflix, they would rather fix it. They'd rather change a flat than meet the talent. Because they do not want to get near the talent. Any executives, the production company buffers the talent from Netflix or any network, because they don't want the talent to become obsessed with anybody there. Cause they know, like, that's like you, they like the talent. Sometimes you have crazy, like, reality stars that think that they're going to short circuit the production company and make friends with the network person. Anytime there's a network person on set, they are literally guarded. There's like Secret Service. Yeah, we got them over here. We're going to get a sandwich. You know, like, nobody lets the talent near the network people. It's always been my experience. And so I have no contacts at Netflix. That long story means I have no contacts at Netflix. I have no email. I have no email ever with the suffix Netflix. Never met anybody there. I have nobody to call. On a very rare occasion, I might have a brainstorm. I'll reach out to Mike, who was my director of my TV show, who sometimes works at Netflix. But Mike also doesn't have a short circuit, because everybody in this business that we know is constantly moving through jobs. So that person that I met at Netflix and during the shoot, I can't even remember her name. I'm sure she doesn't even work there anymore. These people are constantly moving around. So that's it. So don't give me any show pitches. I can't do anything with them. I can't even sell the show that we have that is a hit. I can't sell your idea.
I mean, I hear you, but I have this idea.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
That's what happens. My brother calls it. What does he say? He goes, I got stung. That's what my brother says. He goes, this guy wanted to meet me about it, making him a table. He goes, he's talking. He goes, all of a sudden, he's pitching me his TV show idea. He goes, I'm making tables in the Valley. Do you think I have any connections in the TV business anymore? That's what my brother says. You know, the people meet my brother, they think he's a celebrity. People meet me, they think I have, like, TV connections. I have none. All I could do is send it up the chain. Occasionally, I'll send something to my agent, but more than likely, at this point in my so-called television career, I'm just waiting to be chosen to do something by somebody that knows who I am. So I might get reached out to be like, do you want to be the fourth banana on this thing? And I'll be, no. Do you want to do this? No. I am talking to ask This Old House to do a segment coming up in the fall, which is great. But that's my TV credits at the moment.
Well, but even that is based on what you're doing for yourself. It's based on, like, the thing that you're producing on your own for you. And that's, you know, like, you've been saying this for years, just in this age, we are, I don't want to say in charge, but we have the capacity to produce every step of our own media. And that whole thing about relying on these producers and these production companies and these networks to find you and want you and be willing to pay for you, like, that's just not really that important. It's not comparable to what you can produce on your own, I don't think.
It's not important anymore. If you step into a production company situation where you're going to maybe be on Discovery Channel or this or that, they are literally going to use you like toilet paper the whole entire time. Like, oh, everything's great. As soon as they get you on camera, it's like they flush it down the toilet. That's the problem. As soon as they get you on camera, they could care less what happens to you after that. Because now they got the talent trapped. They got what they need from you. And by it, like, basically, you might as well win Powerball to get a season two. If you get a season two, you've just won Powerball. And then get season, well, you don't win anything except an opportunity to get taken advantage of again. But you got to use those opportunities to your own advantage, like make a YouTube, make an Instagram and nurture that. Use that audience and navigate them to you.
It's a, the whole entertainment business is weird. I mean, related, unrelated. When I signed my book deal, the, you know, I had a lawyer look over contracts and everything, but every time you put out a new book, you sign a new contract. And in that contract, it says that publisher has the rights to first refusal for your next book, which is standard across the board. So you're basically stuck with the same publisher for life until they say, no, we don't want to put out that book. And then you can go to somebody else.
Now, can you get around that by giving them a terrible idea? That's like, my next book is going to be about, you know, garbage cat cans. Poop.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah, cat poop.
And I got an interesting answer to that.
Like, there's got to be a way around that, right?
I just happen to see this reel. I'm pulling off my knee pad. I told you guys my knee has been bothering me. Ow. Look at this.
Sounds like you hurt yourself even more.
Trying to do the right thing. You have a knee brace. Van Morrison was signed to some crazy record executive. This, you could look this up. And he signed some deal with no lawyer. He didn't know what he was doing when he was a young artist. And he had a hit song right away. But in his contract, the next 30 songs had to go to that same lawyer. So Van Morrison wrote 30 bad songs. And they were published, and that's how he got out of that contract. He intentionally wrote 30 because he did not want to try and accidentally write another hit. So he wrote 30 bad songs to get out of that contract. Well, to finish that contract, not to get out of it, but to complete it.
Yeah, that's why a lot of bands do the greatest hits album or a compilation or a live album or something to complete their contract.
Yeah. So there you go. So you can do that. You can do something that's less than perfect.
Purpose. I mean, I guess, you know, there is a potential for backfire because if they, like, if you came up with a book about cat poop and they were like, oh, yeah, sounds good, then you have to write a book about cat poop and then that's like published with your name on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see that maybe backfiring, but.
And to be fair, like, the publisher that I worked with, or I guess still under contract with, they've never been like, we own you. It's always like, I could probably ask them, hey, I'm going to write a fiction book. And they'd be like, go ahead. You're on your own. Like, I'm sure it would be like that, but that's just the way the industry works.
That's something we haven't talked about in quite a while. I mean, you've done three books?
Three books.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that something you have thought about doing more of? Something you've had interest in?
Not really.
Really?
It takes so long.
I hate writing books. It's the worst thing in the world.
It's just such a long process. If I do another book, I don't think it'll be project-based book. I think it'll be more of a word-based book. Like, I have a note, and my note is called Future Book. And it's like someday I kind of want to document my creative process, and I'm kind of chapterizing it. Like, I don't know if I'll ever get it published, but it's kind of like for me. It's kind of like me setting my own little, like, this is how I work. These are the constraints that I've set myself. This is how I come up with ideas. And, you know, like, one of the chapters is what you do is important. You know, like, you might think what a doctor does is more important than what you make in your basement, but what you make in your basement satisfies this inner need for you. It makes you a happier person. When you're a happier person, you are better around other people, which, you know, it just increases the good to bad balance in the world. And sure. Maybe this will be a book. Maybe not, but it's right now it's for me. And I think maybe it's like when you write a song and you write a song for you, that song has a little bit more energy, a little bit more power. And, you can see when people are making videos just to make videos because their heart's not into it. And so maybe my heart will be in this book and 10 years from now, I'll get it published, but we'll see.
Interesting. Yeah, you can always self-publish too, especially something like that that's personal, and maybe you wouldn't necessarily want editor hands in it.
Yeah.
You know, or something. I don't know. That's something. I mean, the only book I've ever done was self-published. And so, you know, the people that edit it were just friends of mine who read it and said, hey, this sounds kind of weird. You should change this or whatever. But I never had an actual editor get in and try to like really change how I said something or any of that. That seems like that might be annoying to deal with, but or helpful, I guess. I mean, maybe it's not annoying. I don't know. Cool. Well, let's see. What have I been doing since last time? I don't remember what I was doing last week when we talked. I'm still in the kind of summer breakness of everything. I was telling you guys before we started recording, today is the first day of school. So my kids went back to school and my oldest goes to college tomorrow for the first time. So this week has been a lot of,
that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's been a lot of feeling like we need to fit stuff in and, we have to go buy the thing and we gotta pack the thing and what about this? And it's just feels like a lot of last minute preparation for stuff. And the college thing is just so weird. Like, I'm not worried about it or anything, but it's just a whole new set of things to think about and stuff. So, my brain
and
is
you
mostly
yourself
been
just
there.
Graduated from college not too long ago.
Yeah, it was like just a couple of years ago. Yeah. And it was funny, you know, talking to him about, you know, the next couple of weeks are important because this is when you meet a lot of people for the first time. And this is the first couple of weeks are when you really start to get integrated into new groups of people and new activities and new, you know, it's important to really be like eyes up in the next few weeks. And so in the process of telling him that, I was like thinking back to when I went to school, and I was even talking to my parents about this last night, just, you know, was I like him? Was I as oblivious to what's about to happen as he seems to be? And like, how did I, you know, just thinking back on my own experience and like, and we're different people and it didn't matter if I was the same or not. But it was interesting thinking back about, you know, being in his position and what I changed and learned and, you know, all that stuff. So anyway, my brain has been mostly in that for the last week or so, but I did make, I made a video about making wooden climbing holds. I don't know if I told you guys that or not, but most climbing holds are made out of like resin and there or some sort of plasticky something. And they have these different formulations with different types of grip, and then they mold something and then they cast it in this resin. And I've done that before. I've made videos about that process before a long time ago. But so this time I decided to make some wooden holds, which a lot of people do. And it's just a different kind of thing. You know, they can either be really hard to hold. They can be nice and smooth. They can be any species, which is kind of interesting. I immediately thought, well, these need to be hardwood. But the more I got to looking into it, actually softwoods, as long as they're smooth, are pretty good for climbing holds because they just have a different texture to the grain, which is what you actually touch and the kind of grip that you can get. And the shapes that you can get out of them are slightly different than what you would get out of a hardwood. You know, it has to maintain its whatever shape you carve into it with your weight on it. So the overhangs and stuff, pieces that stick out, have to be hardwood. But if you're doing big, smooth, round shapes, doing a softwood works just as well because it's not going to break. It's not going to crack. There's no like sharp things to dig into it, to dent it, like, you know, if you were using pine or something. So it's been kind of interesting thinking through that. And so the video was about basically I have a bunch of scrap wood of different species. I want to try a few different methods to see like what is the best method for me, tools to use, process to use to get a hold out of it that is worth using on a climbing wall. And so I did, you know, bandsaw work. I did rasps. I did just sanding. I did a like a grinder with a Arbortech thing on it. You know, so I tried several different things and then ended up finding kind of the best path towards 30 minutes. You can get a really nice hardwood hold, smooth, ready to put on the wall. And I ended up with a few really nice holds that are now up there and climbable, and they look great. I mean, having a nice chunk of walnut on your climbing wall with like lots of curves is really cool. You
know? How do you attach them?
So the same way you do normal holds, you countersink a big like 3/4 inch hole in it and then drill through. And then I glued in a washer into the countersink so that when you put a bolt through there, it's got a metal face, which you wouldn't necessarily have to do with a hardwood, but I just kind of, for completeness, yeah, I just important. Put it in there. And so, and the big ones go with one bolt in because there's a bolt pattern on the wall, right? So it's like every 6 or 8 inches. I don't remember what I did. So you do one bolt and then you do another hole somewhere on it that you can drive in a long screw. That way it won't twist. It's held in by the bolt and then you stop the twist with the screw. So did that and excuse me, ended up with some cool holds. And then also as I was doing that, I started thinking about when you're climbing there and training for climbing, there's these things called campus rungs that people use for training. And basically it's just a strip of wood with a rounded edge and they can have a different slope, like really slight slope on the top or the bottom. And then they have different material thicknesses. And this is just a strip of wood, no carving, no whatever. And I've seen these before, but I've never gotten one. So I started looking into them and realized it's literally a strip of wood with a slight angle cut on it and then smoothed so that it's good on your fingers. So I'm looking around and I've got these offcuts of maple that are about 16, 18 inches long, 1x2s, and they're left over from when I made my kitchen cabinets, the little stiles around the front of the thing. And I've got all these, there's, I don't know, I had several of them. I'm like, these would be perfect for these campus rungs. And they're maple, like solid maple. They look nice. They're perfect for this, the wear and everything. So I just cut them down, routed the edges, screwed them into the wall, and went to try them out and then realized that they are 3/4 inch thick, which means when you go to hold onto them, you have 3/4 inch right here underneath the first knuckle of your finger. And that's what you're holding onto. It's like, so I was like, all like, oh, cool. I can make this other thing that I can barely use because they are so, so small. But it's a good challenge because it gives me a thing to work towards, you know, like.
Nice.
Anyway, it's been really fun getting back into climbing. And a couple of days ago, I guess over the weekend, we actually had like a free weekend. And I went out in the afternoon and put on some music and opened all the windows because it's like 1,000 degrees and just climbed for a couple of hours. And I would go out there and climb and then I would lay down on the mat and look up at it and build a little route, you know, only use these go and you go tape them and then you try to climb that and it doesn't work and you come lay back down and you look at it. And it was just like, it was the first time I'd done something like that with no time limit, no, I wasn't trying to entertain anybody. I wasn't trying to accomplish anything. It was just like, I'm just going to go in this place and climb. And it was really cool.
Nice. So, and you made that.
I did.
And that's right. Like you got to be just enjoying every moment of that. I'm like, I did this.
It is really cool. It's gratifying, you know, to be in there and be like content with all of the parts that I did, you know, it feels really good. Anyway, so I've been working on that. And I also started installing the air conditioner in there yesterday, which is really cool.
It's a mini split.
Yeah, mini split. I got the inside unit in, the stuff going through the wall, and then got the pad for the outside unit in place. So today, hopefully, I'll get those kind of connected. And I don't know that I'll get it like running today, but I'm still waiting on the battery system and the solar system to show up before I can actually get those in place. Cause that's kind of the whole idea is that I want, my hope is that the air conditioner can be completely solar powered and I don't have to plug it in.
That's super or cool.
Wired in. So that's the goal. Because yesterday when I was filming out there, it actually worked out pretty well because I went out and started doing my setup about, you know, I need to get some air conditioner in here. It's like, so it's so hot and everything. And so I got out my phone to show the camera how hot it was. And it was 84 degrees, which is warm. Oof. But I held it up to the camera and then realized that underneath the 84, it said, feels like 110. And I'm like, oh, see, wow. See, yeah. It's hot. But it was just disgusting. Like these, right now it's super high humidity. It's warm. This weekend, I think, the high is going to be 101, and with the humidity, the heat index is going to be like 113 or 14 or something. That's just crazy. Yeah, but luckily we have a pool, which is very nice.
So I have a question for you. Going back, I don't think I've ever seen you. You said you had an angle grinder with the Arbortech thing on the end to carve away. I'm assuming the turbo plane, which I've used a number of times. And there's when you get the right angle, it's like butter smooth and it feels great and it's really satisfying and it's hard to stop. Did you experience any of this at all? Because I just want to keep making chips and just keep grinding away because it's so satisfying.
Yeah, and because I was cutting on this big, I had this walnut piece that was about, I don't know, 16 inches or something. It's about 6 inches tall. And so I was trying to make a nice, smooth, slightly rounded top, but then cut in on the bottom. And so that's where I was really using that thing because you're like scooping out, right? And I would get in there and kind of like dig in and keep going. And I'm like, if I keep going too far, there's not going to be anything to hold on to. It's just going to be a, you know, like the wrong shape. And so I had to be really careful. And I kind of wish I had more pieces of that same size to be able to play with and do what you're talking about, like to go further and see and like get used to it. But I really just had the one piece and just enough to, you know, but man, that thing makes such a mess, like just everywhere. And it's not like sawdust. It's big chunks and chips.
Best to do it outside if you can.
Yeah, I probably should have. But yeah, so I got to use that some. I didn't use it a ton. But yeah, so I've been climbing and making climbing stuff lately, which is really cool. I haven't gotten around to finishing reordering my office, which doesn't look any different on camera, but I've been working on it. I think now that the kids are back in school and, you know, after this kind of coming weekend, I'll probably start settling back into a non-summer schedule, maybe. But things have just been really different this summer with my work schedule, and which I'm happy about. Like, I'm really glad that it was different this summer, but it's probably about time to switch back. So Jimmy, you were telling us before we started recording about your knee. Do you want to like give the, listeners,
we were just talking about getting old. I'm 59 and I never really had any mobility issues at all. Thank God. I've never had any. And last week, out of nowhere, my knee started bothering me. It was like a little tickle in my knee, and then it got worse. And I do these late night walks. And last Thursday night, I was walking halfway home. My knee was like, I don't know if I got it in me. My knee just started hurting severely. And, in the next few days, so it's been 6 days, and I've had some serious ups and serious downs with my knee, like serious, like it's not hurting at all. And then it's hurting severely. So I'm probably developing arthritis, and it is painful. It really is painful. Of course, I'm ignoring it completely. You know, be a man, ignore your knee pain, be a man. And
bad advice, by the way. Just want to throw that out there. Bad advice.
Rachel was traveling, so she wasn't around. But now that she's back, she's probably going to force me to go to the doctor. She's got a good orthopedist in the area we're going to go to probably after the weekend. But the pain is severe. And, you know, it's like there, but for the grace of God, go I. It's like, wow. Like, if God forbid something immediately changes. And I didn't even have anything go wrong. It's just an arthritic flare-up, I guess. I guess it's arthritis. Right now it's itching a little bit. I worked pretty hard yesterday. Me and Dave worked pretty hard on the sawmill. And by the end of the day, I was like, I forgot my knee hurt. But last night when I was sleeping all night long, like there was just like pain in my knee. It kind of kept me up a little bit, which I'm not complaining, but now I stand up and I'm walking around and that doesn't really hurt. So I guess it's arthritis. It's something I could think of, but I'm going to go to the doctor and I'll get some, been taking aspirin, but it's just out of nowhere. And it just reminds us that we're fragile.
I think, you know, sometimes we assume that only a trauma or like a hit or a twist or a something is the thing that makes pain. But I think a lot of times, especially as we get older, I would assume, the pain is not from an event as much as sometimes, as much as it can be from just overuse or stretching further than you typically stretch or twisting further than you typically twist. And so a lot of times you don't feel the pain from something that happens to you for a day or two, you know? And so it's not like you fell and landed on your knee or whatever, but so it could be something like that, because I know I haven't run, you know, I've been a runner for a long time, but over the last 2 years, maybe I haven't run more than twice a week, maybe three times a week. And even then it's like the minimum mileage that I can feel good about, like I actually did something. And so I don't run like I used to run. And because of that, when I do run, I feel fine while I'm running. Nothing hurts other than just being tired. But then, like yesterday, I went for a run in the morning, 3 miles, which is kind of my standard. That's my minimum that I do. And by the evening time, I was going up and down the stairs and my knees were aching just a little bit. But it wasn't because I hit them on something or did something. It's just because I don't run as much as I usually do. And so when I do run, my body's like, oh, yeah, forget about that. It's that kind of a thing. So, and for me, like my plan is to try to just start upping that a little bit, not more mileage necessarily, but just adding another day so that my body remembers not to get too complacent with, you know, mobility and whatever. Like I was actually thinking the other day, somebody was talking about a marathon and I'm like, you know, I'm coming up on 50. Like maybe I should try to hit one more marathon before it seems like a bad idea time-wise and everything. People run marathons into their old age. And I was thinking about it and then I was like, I don't think so. It's just so much work and so much abuse on your body for such a long time that I don't know that I could do that. But I want to make sure that I can still run as I get older, you know, and so I don't want to like start falling off of it now. I want to try to like maintain it longer. And I think I was telling you guys before, that's why I've started climbing again. Not only do I want to do it, but it's a way to stay flexible and it's a way to have full body exercise doing something I enjoy so that I can be viable, you know, longer. So I don't know. I'm glad you're still walking. You know, obviously you got to let it heal.
I haven't done my so-called walk, but I'm getting pretty physical workout these few days.
Yeah. I mean, that's the stuff that's going to help you be able to continue to do that stuff, you know, like longer. So I don't know. It's a weird thing getting older and having to begin to meter ourselves, you know, decide. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think we've probably all felt this, just, you know, how much stuff do I want to pick up today? Like is it a good idea for me to still try to lift 8 2x4s instead of 4 2x4s? Or is it, you know, this concrete block, should I do that by myself or get some help or, you know, whatever. Mm. You mentioned the machine earlier, David. Was that your new machine? You said it weighed a bunch.
Yeah, it's over 300 pounds. And so it's just sitting on the floor. I've been putting limits on myself on what I do when I'm by myself, where younger me would just figure it out, you know, but I definitely feel the pain 2 days later or a day later a lot more than what I used to. This machine, it's currently sitting on the floor. There was a point where there were deadlines, but there was also a scheduled week getaway of Kelly and I going to the lake house for her birthday week. And we just blocked out an entire week and I was supposed to get all my filming done before then, so we could enjoy that time. And I was like, oh no, I think I have to take this machine with me to the other house so I can work on this video.
Oh boy.
And so I can't move it by myself. I can scoot it across the floor, but it doesn't scoot very well, but I definitely can't load it into a truck. And so, typical Picciuto fashion, I started researching, like the foot pump lift carts. And I spent a half a day comparing Harbor Freight versus,
Northern?
Vivor?
Oh, VR, yeah.
Yeah. And, I was like, okay, I don't know how long. Okay. The Vivor one can lift up to 1,000 pounds and it has a bigger footprint and it goes even lower, but I don't know how long it's going to take to get here. So I ended up getting the Harbor Freight one, just in case. And it had to go up to a certain height where it can get up on the trailer bed or the truck bed. And, it turns out I didn't have to move the machine at all. I got what I needed to get done before leaving. But now I have this hydraulic foot table that I can move things around. And I've had one before. I used to use it for the go-kart and then I modified it and then I gave it away to a friend. And it's funny, I ended up buying the same one again for twice as much as what they used to be just, you know, 6 years ago. But yeah, I completely limit myself on what I can lift now because I know for a fact, if I do something, it's going to hurt. I pull muscles super easy. Maybe I need to stretch more. Maybe I need to do more strength training. Maybe I need to eat less carbs so I have less inflammation. I have a terrible diet. There's all these things that I should do, but I don't do. So I end up limiting my physical capabilities.
I've had bad luck in what I'm about to say. It's a bad thing, which is why I'll explain. In the past, I've had severe back injuries or severe back pain, I should say. Not injuries, severe back pain. I woke up one day with, must have been a pinched nerve. I don't know what it was. Probably the most pain I've ever felt in my frame up to that point. And that weekend, we had a bad snowstorm. And there was nobody else to shovel the snow but me. So I shoveled the snow. When I was done, I was like, I'm just going to bite the bullet, deal with the pain. I could still move, but there's just pain. And it's not like I was limited by like nerve damage. I guess by the time I was done, the pain was gone. And I was like, wow, I thought it was going to be worse. I ignored it and I went through it and then the pain was gone. I never had that back injury again. And going forward, the same thing, it's had several other examples, but now, for instance, with my knee, I'm like, I'm just going to ignore it and work through it. And yesterday I was telling you guys, me and Dave were wrestling logs at ropes and stuff to get stuff on the sawmill. And the whole time we're doing it, I completely forgot my knee was supposed to be bothering me. And then I was done. I was like, I completely forgot my knee was bothering me. So if I work through it, obviously there's going to be limitations. There's going to be that time where you can't work through. For instance, the other day, my brother calls me and says, I just fell in the shop and I looked down and my finger was pointing the wrong direction. I snapped it straight again. But now when I open and close my hand, there's a clicking sound. I said, it sounds like you probably have a broken bone. He goes, dude, what do you think I should do? I said, go to the hospital. So, 2 hours later,
let me look up on the internet what I should do.
2 hours later, he sends me an x-ray and his middle finger is literally broken diagonally through and displaced. It's broken and displaced.
Yeah.
And now he's in a cast.
Mm.
But until I have that limiting type of injury, that's why I said it's a bad thing because I've had this quotations good luck where I've been able to work through the pain and then it's gone. And so now every time something hurts, I'm like, I'll just ignore it and work through it. Good work gets rid of the pain.
Sometimes.
For sure. That's been my remedy. If I have severe leg injury, I keep saying injury in place of the word pain, because if I had an injury, I'd have an injury. But if I had leg pain, phantom pain, no good reason for it, other than my age, I just ignore it and work through it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you got to take every situation and figure out as best you can what the cause is to see if it's something worth working through.
It's
with
funny,
me, back pain is the same way. I've had a pinched nerve in my back too.
Oh yeah, you've always had some issues.
It's the worst. Like that is a terrible pain. Like when you guys were here that time, remember that you came here for the podcast
thing?
I could barely move. It was terrible. But I've found that other times when I have back pain, I know from it happening so often that, you know, my way around that is a few days of ibuprofen on a schedule and heat at night and, you know, just a couple of things. And then I know that about 3 days later, it's gone. And that's fine because it's a known recurring thing. But, you know, other stuff like this knee pain, this is new. And it's gone, like it doesn't really bother me or anything, but it's a new thing. So every time I have a new something, I have to check and see, well, is this an injury or is this just like a getting older thing or I lifted something too heavy or whatever. Anyway, I think you got to take it all one thing at a time. And I was telling you beforehand that like make sure that you go to the doctor because at this, as we get older, no matter how old you are, as you get older, stuff doesn't necessarily clear itself up as quickly as you would expected to, or, you know, it can, if it's left unchecked, it can like become a bigger, you know, mobility issue or whatever. But I think all of this stuff is going to happen to us. It's going to happen to everybody as you get older. And so then it's like, well, what do you do about it? I personally don't want to settle in. And I've said this before. I don't want to settle into, well, I'm getting older, so I guess I got to stop doing stuff. Like that's, I'm just not there. I probably will get there someday, but so then what do you do? What do you, you just start deciding what's good, what's not good? You just start to try to be realistic about your limits? I mean, like, how do you all, like you said, you don't lift things by yourself, David, or you don't do certain things right by yourself. Are those from experience? Like, I did this one time and it was bad, so now I'm not going to do that anymore? Or are you just like projecting?
Yeah, 100%. Okay. Yeah, 100%. I can feel my limit getting smaller and smaller. And what do I do is I think what I've always done is one of my superhero powers is adapting. Like I've changed careers multiple times. Like I don't like doing the same thing for many years. So I'll just adapt what I do. More digital tools. I love digital tools to do all the work for me. I don't know. I'll figure it out as I go.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see a future. Not anytime soon for me, but I could see a future where I do a lot more, I guess, like instead of doing, I'm for people that are not watching, I'm holding my hands out. Instead of doing these, I start to do more of these, and now I'm holding my hands in. So instead of doing big construction, manhandling material kind of things, I do more, you know, desktop size solving problems, 3D printing, things that don't require as much potential. And that's not really because I don't want to be active, but I can see as I get, you know, into my probably 60s and 70s, I want to be choosy about my action. I want to make sure that the physical things that I do are in the service of me and of my body, not in the service of work and making videos for people, you know, because that's, that's stupid. I mean, if you are just putting yourself at risk physically to get a video out of it or whatever, that's dumb. And I think when I think about the A-frame, part of that is it needs to start in the next few years, because I could see myself a few years after that being like, well, I should probably not do this part of it, or I should probably get somebody else to, and that's not really what I want to accomplish. I want to try to do the thing myself again. So I think it, if I'm going to do that, it needs to start reasonably soon. You know, I can't just keep putting it off.
Yeah. I have to go get surgery on my pinky finger. I have what's called trigger finger. Sounds cool, not cool. But a year ago, I would wake up and my pinky would kind of like be stuck, and I would have to like kind of pop it back in place. And it's just it's kind of a common thing, not painful, just very uncomfortable and weird and kind of scary. And I went to a hand specialist and he's like, we can do a steroid shot. And that, 33% of the time it works. Or we can do surgery, which almost always works. But it, And so I'm like, well, let's just do the steroid shot. So we did that and it fixed it. It stopped doing the popping thing. It stopped getting caught. But it came back, and it came back in a different way. Now I can't, like if I grab a knife or something, my pinky won't wrap around it. And oh, so,
interesting.
Yeah. So I don't have good use of my pinky, and I can sort of feel it on my other pinky. Yeah. I have a Jimmy pinky. And so I just have to make the appointment to go get surgery and get it done. But it's just been a busy summer. I don't want surgery. I don't want to spend the time going to talk, because it's you can't just walk in and get it done. I have to have
so much time.
You have to go in. He has to examine it. Then you got to schedule it. Like, I just want to do I want walk-in surgeries. That's what I want. I don't want two or three appointments, follow-ups.
We need the Valvoline of surgery where you can just anytime, 30 minutes. Pull up. 15 minutes, you're good. Like, in and out. Well, that's pretty funny. So, Jimmy, do you have anything like we're talking about that you've started to set a limit on yourself, or are you still just like going for
I've always been very conscious of I'm alone, and if I try to do this, I could severely injure myself, or if I do injure myself, if I do try it, where's my phone? Is it within reach? These type of things. Mm-hmm. I used to come up to the house. So I bought my house. I wasn't single. I was in a relationship. I bought my house a year later. I was single, and for 5 years I was single at the house. So that means for 5 years, I would come to my house almost always alone on weekends. Cause to me it was, I own this house now. I have to manage it, make sure things work, fix stuff. So every weekend for about 5 years, and there used to be no cell service up here. So, and there was no internet. It was just like a moment in time where nothing had gotten here yet. This was 15 years ago. And I would tell everybody, if I'm not back Monday, my hand is stuck in a boiler or something. So I would tell my friends, if you don't see me in the neighborhood on Monday morning, send the police to my house. And I was always very conscious not to get myself wrapped up in something. I didn't even have any friends up here at the time. They're like, now I have friends. I have people I can call, people that could check on me. But for those 5 years, I would just basically like disappear into the ether, no cell service, and then hopefully I'd get back. So I was always making sure I wasn't on big ladders. If I was, it was super cautious, as making sure somebody knew I was on a ladder. And so I've carried that practice. I still do that. I make extra sure that I try and see into the future. I say, okay, let me look around. What can go wrong? If I fall that way, I can land on that sharp doohickey. Let me move that. So I'm very conscious. That being said, obviously, you know, cut my pinky off 15 years ago and things happen, but there are limits, and I do have chain hoists. I have engine hoist. I have a chain fall to pull stuff up in every building if I needed it. And I have a forklift down the block, and here I actually have a forklift here now because I have my tractor. And so that's yesterday. So between the house and where the sawmill is 3 miles up the road. The sawmill is at the graveyard house 3 miles away. So yesterday, me and Dave wrestled one log with ropes, and I was like, you know what? The amount of time it took us to do that one log is the amount of time it takes us to go and get the tractor. So we went and got the tractor, and we were able to process two logs immediately. So did the 20-minute drive going 5 miles an hour up the road with the blinkers on. And so having heavy equipment really helps. Kind of as like a test. I was like, let's see with the rope, we can get one log up. And we did, we got the one log up, but it's, if you have the equipment, just use the equipment.
Yeah.
We were kind of just seeing if we could do it. It's more of a personal challenge.
Cool. Well,
but yeah, that's, I think, really important. I must have told you guys this over the years. People have heard me tell the story. I wanted to pull a piece of wood out of the attic of my machine shop. It's like a little standalone barn in my backyard. And this was years and years and years ago. I took a small 6-foot ladder and I stood on it and I straddled it. So one leg was on one side of the top and the other leg was on the other side of the top. And the ladder was, the A was facing the building. So I didn't have that forward frontal strength. If that means, like, you're supposed to stand on a ladder, so like the legs are behind you, not on either side of you, if that makes sense. So I'm like standing on the A-frame like an A on top. And I'm reaching over my head and I'm pulling wood out and I'm pulling this one plank out and I'm pulling the plank out. And I'm like, wow, look at all that black mold on there that happened over the winter. Wow, that's crazy. And as I'm pulling it out, it's like falling onto my face. And then I realize what it is all this big, thick black, what I thought was mold, was mounds and mounds of black ants. So as I'm pulling it out, it starts falling all over me. And I was like, you know, like when you get a bug on you, then you don't expect it. And that guy literally turned into Jerry Lewis. I was like, and I did that. Well, the plank is sticking halfway out of the building. And I just forgot that I was on a ladder. And I went like A-frame on top of A-frame. I just literally just fell backwards and landed flat on my back from about a 6 or 7 foot standing up position in the air. And the plank is like, the plank didn't fall on me, but all the bugs did. And the plank was sticking halfway out of the building. And I'm laying on the ground going, my life is over. I'm going to be paralyzed. I'm going to be a quadriplegic or a paraplegic. Then I'm laying there and I'm like, oh, okay. My fingers, my everything works. It's like when you drop your iPhone face down on the cement, you're like, that's it. It's over. And you pick it up and you're like, oh, it didn't break. How did that not break? That's what happened to me. I fell flat on my back and it's like, it's over. This is it. This is how it ends. And
covered in ants.
This is how it ends.
Covered in ants, not dead. But somebody was right nearby tending to the garden. So I called to, and are you okay? I was like, I think so. Everything. Yeah. And I slowly got up and I'm like, wow, that could have gone horribly wrong. Mm.
Yeah.
I have an uncle. My uncle Matty died falling off a ladder.
Really?
So it's very present in my family. Everyone's like, don't do what Uncle Matty did. He was climbing on a ladder, cleaning his gutters, and he fell and broke his neck and died right there on the spot.
Oof.
Yeah. He's not a blood uncle, but he was one of my dad's closest friends growing up my whole life.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's ever present.
Yeah. I guess any advice to people listening is young or old.
Know your limits.
Don't try to, know your limits and be realistic about, you know, being able to do things longer. Like the smarter you are as you go, the longer you get to do what you enjoy.
Yeah. So. If you're about to do something dangerous, always like think for a minute, who can I call if I do get hurt or what's going to happen? Or just always think, try and like look into the future for 10 minutes. Try and see what the 10 minutes into the future could potentially be. You don't want it to be, but in case it does, you really got to be prepared. Now this is getting more into safety just in general, but anytime I'm about to turn the torch on, anytime I'm about to weld, anytime I'm about to plasma cut, I look around and just make mental note of where the fire extinguishers are. Because when you're in a panic and you can't find the fire extinguisher, it's like the longest 30 seconds of your life.
Yeah. So. Cool. Well, I think our Patreon supporters, you guys can find something to recommend for the week. Huge thanks to everybody over there at Patreon that supports the show, that has kept the show going for a long time. It really does make a difference. It matters that we have support on Patreon. So we're very, very grateful to everybody over there at every level. Some people give, a dollar, some people give a lot more, and everybody gets the after show. Doesn't matter how much you get, how much you give, how long you've been giving, any of that stuff. We just really appreciate the support. And so everybody gets to hear us talk about other stuff, which David said he had a poop story for the after show. So I'm just assuming
sure,
that he was
I do.
Telling the truth.
Just happened yesterday.
We're fantastic. So if you want to get the after show and hear David's poop story, you have to go to patreon.com/makingit. Sign up at whatever level you want, and then you can hear that story. The after show is a separate podcast feed that is available only through Patreon. There's also links there for the video after show, so you can watch it on YouTube if you want. But like I said, that's the only place to get those. Huge thanks to our top supporters, because they are awesome. That's Works by Solo, Tinius Space Industries, Rich at Low and Art, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Master of None presents Jack of All Repairs, LLC. Thanks, Master of None. He's been around forever. Jim from Wiser Bees, Daddy Yourself DIY, Chris McCormick at Hatch X, Chad from Mancrafting, Brian and Nancy Make Stuff. Brian changed his really interesting title from last week. Albers Woodworks and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc.
Thank
really
you,
grateful
guys.
For everybody over there. It's awesome. So, do you guys have anything to recommend?
I was going to just mention Yuri Tuchman.
Tuchman?
If you guys haven't seen him already, he's very funny, very creative. If I had to describe Yuri, I met him a few times in Maker Central. He's a great guy. He's like an old master artist, like the old Dutch masters, like kind of like that, painter, comedian, engineer, YouTuber. He's a very funny guy. He's got a funny, and if you've watched Yuri from the beginning was very, it's like we're all like on our like 15th date when you watch Yuri. In the beginning, he's very shy and introverted. And then like now he's really, his comedy comes out quite often, much more often than it ever did before. So go check out Yuri. Funny guy. He makes very playful, funny things just for the sake of making them. Most of what he makes has no purpose in life other than just a personal challenge as a mechanical art piece.
Very cool. All right, David, what you got?
My first one is The Art of Design, and it's kind of changes the way you might think about the word design. Design is more than just creating something to be made or rearranging your living room. It talks about the idea of like all ideas are design. You might design your path on your way to work or whatever. And it's a really, really well done video. And it's only got 5.2 thousand views. And the way it's produced and made, it feels like it should be like a hundreds of thousands of views video. It's really good.
I'm watching it right now. It's beautifully done.
Yeah, it's very good. The other one, you don't even have to put in the show notes. Just you guys can look it up. I've recommended this channel a couple of times, and it's related to today's topic. It's called Bob and Brad. They are the two most famous physical therapists in the world, according to their little byline. One of them passed away a year ago, and another therapist has stepped in. But they got a great video for people of our age. It's about stretches, body maintenance, what to do about this type of pain. They're just so well done, and lots of great information from people who actually know what they're talking about.
Cool. Awesome. That's actually something I meant to say earlier as we were wrapping up the topic, is that if take the thing that you love to do, that you want to do for a long time, think about that. And then that thing is probably not yoga or going to the gym or running or climbing or whatever, pickleball, whatever the exercise is. It's probably not the same thing. But investing some time and repetition into one of those exercises will help you do the thing that you love to do longer. So I know it's easy for a lot of us, especially guys, to be like, yeah, I don't need to do this because I want to do that. But a lot of times this enables that. So just, you know, do some work, do some exercise, find something you like and do it. Let's see, for me, the recommendation is maybe only interesting to me, but it was interesting. A couple of people sent me this channel. Oh gosh, I don't remember the name of the channel now. Electric Classic Cars is the channel. And it's a British company, British guy. I've seen him before. I think he may have had a TV show, but basically they convert classic cars, and they usually do these electric conversions, and it's really cool. But they just recently did a Karmann Ghia, and they did it as a kit. And they took his wife's Karmann Ghia and they went to convert it, but instead of just like a one-off conversion, they made everything so that it can be, all the components can be installed, unfortunately, it's not a DIY kit. So he goes through this whole thing and explains it. And I'm like, where's the link? Show me the link. I want to see what the price is. I want to know, you know. And he has a few partners. I think he has one in Colorado and one somewhere else that they can do the installation for this kit. But it's right now, it's not available for someone to buy, even though it is a complete wiring harness, all of the brackets, all of the everything, it's done. But in watching the video, one of the cool things that I thought was really neat that they did was they built a test unit. It's this big, almost car-sized rolling frame with, it's all flexible and adjustable so that they can set it up to match a car that they're working on, and they can install the batteries and the motors and all of the things and all of the whatever. And then they have a control console for testing. So they can set all this stuff up on this chassis. It's not really a car chassis, but it's just like a framework. And they can test to make sure that everything is doing that it's what it's supposed to do rather than doing that inside of a car. And I thought that was a really cool way to be able to show off what they use and how it all works together and make their testing and building easier by having this kind of, I don't know what you call it, like a framework structure to build the things on. And that's just a tool that they built for themselves to do with these kits on. But anyway, it's really, really interesting to hear somebody who obviously has a lot of knowledge about electric cars and conversions and stuff talk about what all it takes. And I'm really hoping that someday a kit like that will be available for a DIY person and not ridiculously expensive. But I don't know if those two things will ever happen.
Anyway, I saw on Instagram a 1957 Cadillac convertible turned into electric. I wonder if it's the same guys that did it. Obviously very, very
could be
professional, like really yeah. well done.
Yeah. Could be. I don't know. That's what I got. You guys got anything else for this week?
Mm-mm. Be safe.
Cool. Yeah.
Be safe.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
You got to say it. They're waiting. Nobody can hear it, though.
I said I love you. You know that. I love you.